You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back, everyone, to Locked On Rockets, your home for daily and post-game commentary on the Houston Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. As we chat on this Sunday, the Rockets are coming off their 10th win in 11 games, 117-102 over the Knicks on Saturday night at Toyota Center. It wasn't always pretty. The Rockets were down 22 in the first quarter, but ultimately they flipped it by 43 points in just over two quarters, to where they're up by 21 at the end of the third. A lot of storylines to get to, both for the team collectively as well as individually. First, I do want to apologize for being out the past 3 days. I've been on Thanksgiving break. I'm sure a lot of you guys have been busy as well, so that's why we haven't had a program since Wednesday. However, now it's a new week. We're back to regular business, not just here at Locked On Rockets, but across the Locked On Podcast Network. So that means back to the daily show you have come to know Locked On Rockets as. And going forward, I'm actually going to start with a new format for these post-game recaps. And I'm going to call it 3 points, because first off, with the Rockets, everything comes down to the three-pointer. It was a big storyline Saturday night as well. It always is. Rockets were 18 of 47, 38%. That's pretty good. Nothing great, but certainly the overall volume the Rockets take, if they make it a 38% clip when they shoot 47, then that means 18 go in. And against all but a small handful of teams in the NBA, that's probably going to mean that you win that game, especially when you have James Harden and Chris Paul. What it means for the podcast, though, 3 points, just a way of kind of better organizing the show, I feel like, because each game you're probably going to have about three main themes that come out of it. So yeah, between the clever marketing campaign and the fact that it probably better organizes my thoughts, I feel like that's a good point to start from for a lot of these post-game recaps. And my first point, as far as Saturday night, folks, it's about the team. Certainly, it's a big win for the Rockets now, 15-4 overall, number one in the Western Conference, their 10th in 11 games. We've gone through all of that. But what I think this really shows is the level of confidence, cohesiveness, that even after a 22-point deficit in the first quarter, the ability to flip that to a 21-point lead by the end of the third, folks, that's special. And I know the Knicks were without Porzingis, they were without Enes Kanter. The Knicks are not a great team to begin with, now 10-9 on the year, and most of that with Porzingis. But folks, I don't care who you're playing against. This is a league where the Thunder, with the same Thunder roster that beat the Warriors fairly convincingly just 3 nights ago, went out Saturday night and got dominated by Dallas, one of the worst teams in the league. It's not easy, especially when you start off with that level of a hole, to pull yourself out of it, because it's so easy. Over the course of 82 games, it's a grind. There are going to be games, and at bare minimum, individual stretches within games where you just don't have it. Maybe it's a lack of motivation. Maybe it's, in the case of the Rockets, they've had so much rest lately. They only played one game between this past Saturday in Memphis and this most recent Saturday at home against New York. There's only one game in the past 7 days. So maybe there's a little bit of rust in there. You know, as Mike D'Antoni himself said after the game, maybe there's a Thanksgiving hangover. I don't know what it is. Not a literal hangover, but certainly you're home a lot. You're doing a lot of non-basketball things. There are a lot of possible explanations. And then some of it's just randomness. You're going to have games, and certainly individual stretches within games, where you aren't hot, where you aren't quite yourself. That's part of the 82-game grind over the NBA season. And what separates the good from the great is that the great have an overall level of belief that ultimately, if they keep playing their game, they're going to pull themselves out of it. As opposed to, I'll draw on the Thunder example again. If you're not to that great level, it becomes easy to say, this isn't our night, and just to kind of let it take a toll on your effort in other areas. The Rockets never did that, and even though the first quarter things went about as comically wrong as it possibly could, the defense wasn't good, the shots were not falling offensively. At the same time, when you have Chris Paul and James Harden, only 2 turnovers between them and a combined 23 assists, you are going to get so many quality looks from three, that when you combine that with the volume the Rockets take, ultimately it's going to be tough for all but a small handful of teams around the league to keep up. And Chris Paul, even though he shot just 2 of 12 from the field, again, 13 assists to 1 turnover, James Harden, 37-10, another great game for him against the Knicks. But I think what was most important, again, is only one turnover to 10 assists, 23-2, the assist-to-turnover ratio between Chris Paul and James Harden. Rockets as a team only had 7, and that's big because if you don't have unforced errors, then the Rockets are such a good team that ultimately, even if they dig a 22-point hole, they're good enough to where the game is going to be uncompetitive in the fourth quarter. And other than James Harden, no one even had to play more than 31 minutes. That's how good these Rockets are. And I know that they should not have dug themselves that early hole. We'll talk about some of the culprits in a minute, most notably Clint Capella, in my opinion, even though his overall stat line was solid with 12 and 15 and 3 blocks. I thought defensively he left a lot to be desired. But before we get into the highlights and the lowlights as far as the overall team, or as far as the players on the team, I think it's important just to look at the group collectively and say that, hey, led by James Harden and Chris Paul, they never let the early struggles take a toll on them mentally. They never got sloppy. They kept plugging along, and when the shots started falling, Trevor Ariza, who had 16 points, 6 of 14 from the field, Ariza had a stretch early in the second half where he was just on fire. That pushed them from basically down 3 at the half to up 10 relatively quickly. And as soon as those shots fell, there was just nothing the Knicks could do to keep up. Overall, it was not exactly a terrible night for the Knicks, who shot almost 50% from the field. It's just most teams are not able to shoot as many threes, especially not the high quality the Rockets can get with James Harden and Chris Paul. Knicks only took 17 in the night. That also, I think, speaks to the way the Rockets have done a pretty good job this season of defending the three-point line. Because, yeah, certainly the Rockets understand that threes are a huge component of the modern NBA game, certainly for themselves offensively. But taking away the other team, that can be a big deal as well. But ultimately, there are only a small handful of teams around the league that can keep up if the Rockets continue to play their game. And I think that's what really stood out Saturday night, is that even if you spot the other team a 22-point lead, that's how good these Rockets are. 15-4, 10 of their past 11. This is a special, special group. The point differential is in double figures now, I believe, plus 10.1. Let me refresh that to make sure I'm reading that right. Yes, plus 10.1 through the first 19 games, almost through the quarter point of the NBA season. The Rockets are number one in the West. Again, 10 of 11. They're ahead of the Warriors. Point differential is in double figures. This is just a machine as far as what they're able to do to opponents. And over the grind of 82 games, I think certainly the talent is special, but in addition to the talent, you have to have a certain mental edge. And even though they got down 22, in some ways, I actually think that ended up kind of showing that mental edge more than, say, if this were just another ho-hum 30-plus point beatdown the way it was Wednesday night against Denver. To me, even though they dug themselves that early hole, the way they pulled themselves out, folks, that's pretty remarkable. Now, second point of my 3 points for this game. I already talked about James Harden and Chris Paul, who were, again, Chris Paul shooting left something to be desired, but yeah, if you have 43 points, 23 assists, and 2 turnovers combined, folks, that's going to get it done. But we expect that from them. Those are top 10 level players. Chris Paul did ramp it up to 31 minutes, so that's another good sign in his ongoing return from the knee that cost him almost a month of the start to this NBA season. But I know a lot of us kind of expect that from them because that's how great they are. So what I want to look at from Saturday night, and it wasn't just a coincidence if you listen to Mike D'Antoni's post-game comments, was the switch to P.J. Tucker in the starting lineup over Ryan Anderson. And to some extent, it seemed to benefit both players, especially Ryan coming off the bench. 17 points, 7 rebounds in his 20 minutes, 6 of 11 from the field, 4 of 7 from 3, plus 17 in his 20 minutes. P.J., again, 2.6 rebounds wasn't anything to write home about. He's actually a minus 2 in his 28 minutes. But I think everyone in the starting lineup had their plus-minus figure kind of artificially depressed a little bit just based on that poor start to the game, which, again, I don't think was necessarily anyone's fault other than maybe Clint Capella, and I'll get to him in the third point. I know I've been kind of foreshadowing that for a while. But as far as the other four, I think that was just kind of circumstantial, the plus-minus differential and what that ended up being. Overall, I thought PJ played well in that starting lineup. And entering the game, Mike D'Antoni said that it was just because Ryan hadn't really practiced this week. He missed Wednesday's game, has not really practiced. Even Monday, he was out with an illness. They didn't specify exactly what that was. And they just said going into the game that because PJ had been to practice, they wanted him in that starting lineup. After the game, though, it was a little different. Kelly Eco, I've had him as a fill-in host here at Locked on Rockets. By day, he's a writer over at the Dream Shake, that's the SB Nation blog, covering the Rockets. And he said after the game that D'Antoni alluded to the idea that Ryan may not always start, adding that lineup flexibility is key. And of course, he did look great off the bench tonight. So yes, that's a great scoop from Kelly. Thanks as always, Tim, one of the better journalists, especially one of the better young journalists covering the team. And I'd say around the NBA, does great work over at Kelly Eco NBA on Twitter, if you aren't already following him. But as far as what this means for the Rockets, PJ Tucker, his two best games this season were the opener in Golden State, and then the home game against Cleveland, the Thursday nighter a couple of weeks ago. And I know Cleveland's overall record is not that sexy, but folks, when the Cavaliers want to play, when they are engaged, and they certainly were that Thursday night, rested with LeBron James trying to make a statement, folks, they are right up there. I wouldn't say they're Warriors level, but other than the Warriors, they're as good as it gets. I don't care what their record is. That's how talented they are. And there are certain matchups where you need that defensive versatility. Because if you go back to the offseason, the reason a lot of people thought, and it was wrong, but the reason a lot of people thought that the Thunder might be a tougher matchup for the Warriors than the Rockets was because of the defensive versatility, the fact that the Thunder have so many long athletes, certainly Westbrook, but then you look at the wing, Andre Robertson, Paul George, so many different looks that they can throw at the Warriors. And people thought that the Rockets were more static. Now, I think that was kind of a superficial analysis, because if you look at what the Rockets did this offseason, bringing in both PJ Tucker and Luke Bamute, by the way, even though we didn't have a postgame show for Wednesday, let's throw Luke Bamute a shout out for getting plus 57, in the plus minus after the Denver game, the highest in the 20 years that ESPN has been keeping that stat. So both of those guys have flashed at various points to start this season, two very astute sightings by Daryl Morey. But even though they're not star players, they bring you some of that same level of defensive versatility that a lot of people thought they had in the Warriors, or in the Thunder, and why they were such a perceived threat to the Warriors. So that's why, going down the line, you could see this more. And again, I don't think it's a coincidence that PJ Tucker's best games have been against the two most high-profile opponents, because he's the type of signing you make for those series, for a playoff series against Golden State, for a playoff series against Cleveland. That's why you sign those guys. The flip side, that's why people were down on the Rockets. Even though the Rockets have not played the Warriors in a seven-game playoff series, a lot of people around the league have said, who does Ryan Anderson guard? And to some extent, the Rockets could mitigate it with playing Ryan at the five. That's something we saw him do even last year, a couple of games against Golden State, and certainly the opener this year. Maybe if Clint isn't all the way there, then you have Ryan at the five and play super small. Maybe that could be an option. But regardless, I think you'll play the hot hand at the five. But then from the one through four spots, you want guys that are athletic enough to switch on everything. People have been wondering, what do you do with Ryan Anderson? Well, against a tougher matchup, it's interesting that even in November, that D'Antoni is acknowledging that it could be a possibility. Now, of course, D'Antoni did not spell out what matchups those would be, but I don't think it takes a genius to put two and two together and see what that could be referring to. Now, I don't think it's going to be any sort of permanent lineup change. I would expect, my hunch is that Monday against Brooklyn, that Ryan is back in his starting spot. I think generally, Ryan's comfortable there. The team is comfortable having him out there. And certainly both Ryan Anderson, both James Harden and Chris Paul are better off having Ryan Anderson alongside them. But I think that it's a wrinkle that that acknowledging that it's not all that Ryan has been sick, that it is something that they could pull out in the future based on just individual needs, individual matchups, lineup flexibility. I think that's a big first step in eventually using a lineup, starting PJ Tucker or Luke Bamute in place of Ryan if the matchup calls for it. By the way, it's not all that something's wrong with Ryan either. Other people have pointed out the same thing that I've been noting on this show for weeks, which is the chemistry between Chris Paul and Ryan Anderson is off the charts. Right now, Chris is averaging almost 7 assists over 36 minutes to Ryan Anderson alone. Ryan's the type of floor spacer that Chris Paul just has not had throughout his career. It's just a perfect fit, exactly what he needed in L.A. from a 4 or a 5 and never really had. Blake Griffin, of course, improved his shot a little bit over the course of his career, but never remotely close as a perimeter spacer to the level that Ryan Anderson is at now. So we've seen the way that Mike D'Antoni wants to use James Harden and Chris Paul. of course, they're both going to start, but generally Chris checks out earlier, and then you have Chris checking back in for James late in the first, early in the second quarter to anchor that bench unit. And so then if you have Ryan coming off the bench, in theory, it's easier for Ryan to play with that bench unit. Now, again, there are ways you can stagger that over the course of the regular season. I don't expect it to be any sort of radical change to where P.J. Tucker is your regular option at the four. However, down the line, if the Rockets get into competitive playoff series, I do think that's something they could turn to. And as far as what it means when the rotation gets tightened and you don't have as many wild fluctuations over the course of a game, then I think it makes it all the easier to get Chris and Ryan together as well. If you bring Ryan off that bench around the same time that you bring Chris Paul back in for James Harden, then you kind of capture those synergies as well with the additional defensive benefit, of course, of having Ryan Anderson guard the other team's second unit as opposed to the first, so there's not quite as much of a stress on his defense, just how versatile he is. So it might be the best of all worlds for the Rockets. I know PJ has been a little sluggish to start the year, but he's picked it up in recent weeks. And again, I don't think it's a coincidence that PJ's two finest games have come against the Warriors and the Cavaliers. I think his signing and also Luke Bamute's were tailor-made for those high-profile matchups with so many options because of the versatility the Rockets needed on defense a year ago, didn't have. Now they have it. A lot of folks around the league maybe did not realize that it slipped beneath the radar because P.J. Tucker, Luke Bamute, they're not household names. But folks, they give you that level of production. I've certainly not been worried about them individually. The only questions you could point out are, well, how should the Rockets best optimize them? And to me, to best optimize them, you need to be open-minded to the idea of potentially starting them if the right matchup calls for it. And besides all the other X's and O's factors, yes, there are some situations where guys might get rattled if they're off the bench or starting. Are you playing with their mind? But folks, these are veterans. Ryan, PJ, Luke, all of these players are very secure in themselves. At this point in their NBA career, they know who they are. And so I don't think whether they come off the bench, whether they start, you're going to have any sort of radical difference in terms of their approach to the game. I think in many ways, it's kind of similar to the dynamic the Spurs have from the standpoint of whether you start, whether you come off the bench. What you want are guys that are secure in their roles. They know what they're supposed to do. And I think all three of those guys, while there are certainly differences between PJ and Ryan, there's a common thread that they are veterans, they are secure, they know what they are. And so if one starts one day and one starts the next, I don't think there's going to be an appreciable difference in terms of their state of mind. I think they're equipped to handle it. And while I don't think this is going to be any sort of radical change immediately, my guess, even though it's not confirmed, is that Ryan goes back to the starting lineup tomorrow night against Brooklyn. And generally, he starts more games throughout the course of the NBA regular season. However, big picture, I think it's something to keep in mind as you get closer to the playoffs. There are certain matchups that PJ might be more advantageous starting, and also Ryan off the bench, where his defensive limitations are not quite as big. I know he's made some strides this year. I've seen the isolation numbers. Ryan is he's gotten better, but certainly he's not anywhere near the level of PJ or Luke. So if you start one of those two guys, then I think you can get the best of both worlds. You give the Rockets even more defense against the other team's frontline players, and then you bring in Ryan off the bench as sort of the energizer bunny, and then you also capture some things out of the synergies between Ryan and Chris Paul, now that you have Chris Paul anchoring that second unit. So again, I don't think it's something that the Rockets are going to change radically throughout the year. I also don't think they really need to, because all of those guys are mature enough. They know what their roles are. They know how they're going to play. But I do think it's nice to see that Mike D'Antoni is open to making that change down the line if the matchup calls for it. So even though Ryan was sick this week, I know that was the party line, the company line, whatever you want to call it, going into the game. At the same time, I think that was kind of a convenient excuse for the Rockets to kind of tinker and experiment with something that internally they had already sort of known was an option for them down the line. And by and large, I think it ended up pretty well, certainly for Ryan off the bench and for PJ as a starter, even though I know his individual numbers didn't show it, and neither did the plus minus at minus two in his 28 minutes. I don't think that was on PJ. I think there were just some unfortunate things that happened in the start of that game that sort of skewed everyone in terms of the plus minus that was in that in that initial wave when the Rockets got down 22 points early before, of course, rallying, flipping it dramatically, and ultimately winning by 15 points, 117 to 102. And that leads into my final point, which is, well, why the Rockets had that 22-point deficit in the first place. And I will say collectively, they missed a lot of shots in the first quarter. It wasn't just any one guy. I thought defensively, even guys like Trevor Ariza, I didn't think they were as crisp as they normally are. James Harden also had a couple of lowlights. But I think where this all kind of came together was the lack of rim protection. And I've made a big deal this year about Clint Capela making the leap. And by and large, he still has. I mean, it's been a fabulous season for Clint. And even though his past couple of games have not been anything to write home about, I would still say he is very much in the All-Star conversation right now after these first 19, almost 20 games. Clint has been really, really good. But Saturday night, it's okay to say he wasn't. It's okay to give him the praise. And quite frankly, if you're going to give him the praise that we have, you also have to hold the mirror up when it's not going that well. And Kylo Quinn, a career just 6-6 type guy, going off for 20-15, that had a big thing to do with what was happening with regards to Clint Capela on, I wouldn't say one-on-one defense, it was more help defense. Because it's not like Kylo Quinn just went to work in the post, it was more that everything, especially Clint, I thought, was just a step slow on the rotations, and so when he's a step slow coming to help, then all of a sudden he leaves too early, whatever it may be, and then that leaves that little slip pass to whoever the center is, in this case Kylo Quinn, for the easy bucket or getting fouled. Quinn went to the line 8 times, made 6 of them. But I think the common theme is that, you know, the Knicks are a fairly attacking team. You look at Courtney Lee, Michael Beasley, Tim Hardaway Jr. They try and do a lot of things off the dribble. And that's when you need your center like Clint to be able to help without fouling. And I guess to his credit, he didn't get in substantial foul trouble. Only 3. But it seemed like he was kind of caught in no man's land thinking, when should I help and when should I stay back? And the Knicks punished him for that uncertainty, either driving to the bucket themselves for the guards, or when he was in that state of uncertainty, then flipping it to O'Quinn, who was able to finish at the rim, or get fouled. And I'm not panicking over what amounts to just a sluggish 2 games from Clint, because by and large, he's been great on the year. Also, let's acknowledge, even though he started poorly, he still ended up with 12 points, 15 rebounds, 4 of 7 from the field, 3 blocks. So this was not a terrible game, and Clint was plus 9 in his 30 minutes. So let's give him credit. It could have been a terrible game, just as I credited the Rockets collectively for not getting too down in the dumps by that start. Neither did Clint. He played through it. I thought in the second half he was much better. However, as far as what got them to that 22-point deficit, I thought he was sluggish. It wasn't so much from a physical standpoint, it was more from a mental standpoint. His decision-making defensively just seemed a little rusty, and maybe that has to do with the time off. What I think it may have more to do with is the matchups. I've asked Mike D'Antoni before, because the start to the year for Clint, what made it even more impressive, and I've said it on this program before, was that he did it against some of the best centers in the NBA. These incredible numbers that Clint's been putting up, 4 games against Marc Gasol, 2 against Joel Embiid. He's played Rudy Gobert, Dwight Howard, Miles Turner. He's gone against some of the best that the league has to offer. Kylo Quinn is not one of those guys. There's a reason he's a 6-6 guy, and that's even after putting up 20-15 on Saturday night. But when you're looking at someone like Kylo Quinn that is not elite, that doesn't always make it easier. Because the flip side, your defensive game plan, it shifts. Because as opposed to always having to account for that player, in theory, you should be able to help more, and then also your team can also should be able to rotate and help weak side if that player, in this case O'Quinn, gets open on the baseline. And to that extent, the Rockets didn't tonight, and that also has to do with other players, not just Clint Capela. I don't want to harp on just Clint. I thought he was kind of the key storyline. There were certainly some others in the first half. It certainly was not a case where everyone else was perfect, and Clint was the only guy letting the team down. Overall, I do think the defense was just lethargic all the way around in the first quarter. But Clint in particular, I've asked Mike D'Antoni about the concept of matchups, and Mike generally downplayed it, saying that Clint's responsibilities are the same no matter who he's going up against. He wants him to approach the game the same way. And while I'm not going to speak for Mike, I think he was primarily referring to offense when he said that. Because on the offensive end of the floor, when you have James Harden, Chris Paul, those guys running the pick and roll, generally you're going to get enough switches, enough mismatches to where eventually, no matter who, in theory, is guarding Clint, he's going to have an opportunity to roll to the rim and do many of the same things in terms of his positioning on the floor, no matter who he's going up against. I agree with Mike on that. Defensively, I think there are some differences based on who you're going up against. Because I think the game is a lot simpler Now, it can be more challenging. It's more challenging yet simpler, if that makes sense, when you're going up against a Marc Gasol, because you are certainly not going to leave Marc Gasol. And so he presents his own level of challenges, certainly a very accomplished post player. I'm using Marc as an example, but you can throw in, again, Joel Embiid, Miles Turner, any big man that the Rockets have faced over the first 19 games of the year, or, well, I should say the first 18 before you got to Kyle Quinn on Saturday night. But it's pretty simple. When you're Clint Capela, you're not going to leave one of those guys. You have to kind of stay just focused on them, accounted for. It's not that you're never going to help. Certainly, you're going to do it on occasion. But by and large, your responsibility is simpler. When you're going up against the Knicks and someone like Kyle Quinn, then generally the way you're going to defend in the perimeter, you should be able to have a little bit more help inside in terms of rim protection than you would if the center was a little more accomplished. But the flip side is that that gives you more responsibility. If you're Clint Capela, your decision-making is a little more complex, I would say, because you're trying to determine, okay, is this when I help? Is this when I stay back? Where is the help defense going to be rotating from? You have to make more decisions. And so in theory, it gives Clint more flexibility. And for a guy that's, you know, 6'10", an incredible athlete, that's a good thing. But it also, from a mental standpoint, makes it a little more challenging. And maybe part of it is that there just haven't been that many matchups this year for Clint to do that, for to be able to sort of rove in a little bit more of a free safety type mindset. I think maybe some of it, the slowness mentally, I did think he got better in the second half. Again, that's important to note. I do think he got better as the game went along. But I think maybe part of it is just rust from not being in that situation. Maybe part of it is just not playing many games over the past week. But whatever the reason, I do think it's something to just kind of watch, just keep on the back burner, because it was a weakness early in this game. And I don't think it was so much that, well, Clint was exposed, because athletically, he's an incredible guy. He's incredibly athletic. He's strong. He can do everything you ask of a center, from a rebounding, shot blocking, scoring at the rim. It's the mental side of the game where Saturday and on occasions this year, you've had a few lowlights that make you wonder. And they haven't come very frequently. Certainly, I still think, as I said leading off this segment, I think that Clint is still very much in the All-Star conversation and very much should be. So I'm not panicking over one game. It's just a trend to sort of watch in the days ahead, because the Rockets do have a softer schedule coming up. You don't exactly have a murderer's row in terms of centers going forward. So I would say, let's just watch Clint. I do think he made quality adjustments Saturday. Hopefully those persist. But I think generally early in the game, his struggles, it wasn't so much like Kyle Quinn was beating him one-on-one. It was that the Knicks took advantage of what I thought was just a little bit of mental sluggishness, uncertainty from Clint over how am I going to defend? When am I going to help? When am I going to stay back? What is my responsibility here? I just think his mental decision-making on the defensive end was not as sharp as it needs to be, and the Knicks used that uncertainty to their advantage. Now, the Rockets, they did make adjustments. That's what good teams do. And I thought in the second half, Clint was a lot sharper defensively, did end up with 15 rebounds, 3 blocks. So from a topical standpoint, let's give him credit for those as well. But going forward, I think that's something that the Rockets are going to have to monitor. But the upside is that despite all of this, folks, the Rockets, and not just the Rockets as a whole, Clint individually, both, they all pulled themselves out of it. And that's the big thing. As I said in the first point, more than anything, what I think you saw from the Rockets in this game was a resilience that only a select few NBA teams have. Because even the really good ones, and I've said before, as much as we kind of love to pile on the Thunder over in Rockets Twitter, they're 8-11 now on the season, folks, the Thunder are eventually going to figure it out. I don't think they're going to figure it out enough to be the number 2 seed in the Western Conference and challenge the Rockets. By the way, they're 7 games back in the loss column right now as we record this podcast, and we're not even to December. But I do think they're going to figure it out enough to certainly be a playoff team, even get in that 4-5 matchup, and potentially be a thorn in the side of the Warriors in the second round, just as they were when they controlled the game on Wednesday night. But even good teams like that, even very, very talented teams, over the course of 82, you have games where it's just not going your way, and the vast majority are just going to kind of shrug their shoulders, and eventually that is going to take a mental toll on their effort. The Rockets did not let it do that Saturday night, despite the 22-point deficit, and neither did Clint, for that matter, even though the Rockets got off to that slow start, and he was a big reason why, and Kyle Quinn, the guy he was going up against, was having a career night. It would have been so easy for the Rockets, and especially for Clint individually, to just sort of shrug their shoulders, slump, and say, it's one of those games, we're lethargic, maybe we've had too much turkey, whatever it is, and it's just one of those that happens over the course of 82. the Rockets, they kept fighting, and ultimately, over the course of 48 minutes, and really didn't even need the 48 minutes, by the end of the third quarter, they had flipped what was a 22-point deficit to a 21-point lead, because that's how good they are on both ends of the court. But yeah, when their mental focus is there, and Clint eventually turned it around, and then when you have guys like James Harden and Chris Paul leading the way, 23 combined assists to only 2 turnovers, then I think that sets a tone that makes it easier for the rest of the team to follow as well. And if they're mentally on their game, then folks, they're only a very, very small handful of teams around the league that can even compete with them. Because through 19 games, again, point differential over 10, 15-4 in the year, 10 of their past 11 ending in victories. This is just a remarkable, remarkable basketball team. And even these lowlights, as I said, Clint Capella, we're pointing this as a lowlight to kind of, you know, monitor in the games ahead. Folks, he still ended up with 12, 15, and 3, and the Rockets won going away. That's how far you have to stretch it right now to find something to be even remotely concerned about. So enjoy it, Rockets fans. We know what the record is, but in addition to all the obvious things with the record, the talent, I think you should be very happy with the level of mental focus and commitment that on top of just the physical gifts, you have a team that seems to have just a resolute commitment, a cohesiveness, a level of confidence, whatever you want to call it. There's just a certain belief there, a drive that in addition to all their obvious talents, the three-point shooting, the pace, the two Hall of Fame point guards, in addition to all of that, there's just that belief, that drive, that as long as we keep playing, it's going to work out for us over 48 minutes. And I thought that Saturday night was a perfect display of that for the team as a whole. And I think you could even say that a little bit for Clint Capella as well, if you want a silver lining to kind of close out that segment. And with that being the third point of our new three-point segment, I think that's where we can leave off this post-game podcast covering the Rockets' 117-102 win over the Knicks at Toyota Center on Saturday night. Again, my apologies for not having a post-game show after the Denver game Wednesday. I've been on Thanksgiving break visiting my wife's family. I'm sure a lot of you guys have as well. So if you've been wondering where we've been, I think like a lot of you guys, we've been on vacation the past few days, but it's a new week, back in action. Rockets also have not had that many games over the past week, which is kind of cool. Rockets had an entire week in Houston. They got to do Thanksgiving with their families, which is always nice. But yeah, holidays are over, back to basketball. Again, Rockets 117-102 winners over the Knicks on Saturday night, and then back in action again at Toyota Center Monday night against Brooklyn to close out this three-game homestand, hopefully with a win, would push them to an 800 winning percentage. They'd be 16-4 if they take care of the Nets, moving to 16-4, an 800 winning percentage after 20 games, the virtual quarter point of the NBA season. What an accomplishment that would be, but let's not get ahead of ourselves yet. We've got another show, or we will have another show tomorrow night after that game, hopefully another positive post-game episode of Locked On Rockets, as we've had plenty of those throughout this season. Again, if you want to follow me on Twitter or the show, that's the best ways to follow us on a real-time basis. You can follow me at Ben Dubose or the show at Locked On Rockets. You can also email us, lockedonrockets@gmail.com. Questions, suggestions, advertising inquiries, anything we can do to make this a better program. Also, leave us reviews if you can, wherever you listen to us, iTunes, Stitcher, Megaphone, TuneIn, Google Play, pretty much wherever you listen to your podcast, search for Locked On Rockets, you can find us. And the best way you can support us coming to you on a daily basis, the only daily podcast covering the Houston Rockets, leave us positive reviews. And well, if you have an advertiser, try and support them if at all possible. But the easiest thing you do, leave us a 5-star review. And that makes it easier for us, of course, to market ourselves to advertisers as an essential source for Rockets fans. And of course, a way for them to connect with the Rockets community. So yeah, visit our podcast sources, leave us 5-star reviews if you can, if you appreciate what we're doing for you. Also, if you haven't checked out any other shows across the Locked On Podcast Network, I strongly encourage you to do so. The guys over at Locked On Texans, that's Robert Land, Brian Patterson, they do a good job covering what's going on over there with the Texans. They have a Monday night game, Monday Night Football, Texans-Ravens tomorrow night. If you want to hear a preview for that or a post-game recap of that, check out Locked On Texans. They do a great job. As depressing as this Texans season has felt after losing Deshaun Watson, somehow the Texans are only one game back of a playoff spot, and the team that has the final playoff spot, Baltimore, they're playing tomorrow night. So as crazy as it sounds, the Texans have a real opportunity in front of them. So yeah, if you want to hear about that game, both the preview or a recap, then yeah, check out Locked On Texans, again, hosted by my buddies Robert Land and Brian Patterson. They do a good job. until Monday night, which will be a fun one in Houston with both the Rockets and Texans in action, I will sign off. Hope you guys enjoy the rest of your Sunday, your final day of Thanksgiving break. And then Monday, back to work, back to business. And for the Rockets and Texans, that means back to sports. And of course, we'll have you covered on both fronts right here on this Locked On Podcast Network. As always, thanks to you guys for listening. Enjoy your Sunday. Look forward to talking to you again tomorrow when the Rockets take on the Brooklyn Nets. As always, we'll have the postgame coverage right here on your home for Houston Rockets daily and postgame podcast commentary right here, Locked On Rockets.